Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Gina Medlin. This week, we sat down with Zach Rafford. Zach is a professional golfer who found his niche in performing and recording golf trick shots. He's been featured on ESPN's Top 10 at least 5 times and has over 8 million views on his YouTube channel. We discuss his transition from professional golf to creating content for the web, the Velociraptor scene in Jurassic Park, and the science fair projects we did not do as kids. Welcome to the Happiest Hour podcast. Hello, everyone. Welcome. Happy Friday. I'm glad that you're here. Nikki J.
Yo, what up?
How's it going?
I didn't like that. I probably shouldn't say that again like that.
Maybe not. Let's. Should we just rewind and forget that you said that, and then we'll just do another take?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
All right. Yep. Rewind.
DJ Nikki J. What's
hey,
up?
Hey, welcome. Friday afternoon.
Yes, that is more appropriate.
Yeah, I think we got that one.
Perfect. And Zach, welcome. I'm glad that you're here. We are glad that you're here.
I appreciate it. Glad to be here.
The backstory on DJ Nikki J is basically his name has just been changed several times since he's been the producer of this show.
And it's like version 3 and we're on episode 5, I think.
Yeah, it all started when I asked Nicholas his middle name and he didn't tell me. So then I dubbed him Nicholas James.
Yep.
And then it just escalated from there. So now he's Nikki J, sometimes Floyd, just because of autocorrect.
Oh, yeah. Autocorrect thought I said Floyd instead of fine, I think. Was it fluid? It was fluid that changed to Floyd.
Very nice. So do we get a new nickname today? I mean, it sounds like I've got about a 60% chance of a new nickname.
I mean, the odds are in your favor. I think let's see how this episode goes, because we also added sushi or salmon or something to his name last week because one of our stories involved this Taiwanese sushi restaurant was offering free sushi for anyone who had salmon in their name. So a bunch of people went and changed their name.
I'm
legally
a big fan of sushi, so
you would have done
need
that.
To do that.
So you'd be Zach Salmon?
I guess I
or
would.
Or Salmon Zach. King Salmon Zach?
Oh, that actually kind of has a good little ring to it.
See? There we go.
Okay.
But luckily, here, we found this out last week, too. United States, you can change your name as many as you want.
I did not know that. Learned something new today.
See? But that, you said, what country was that?
Taiwan.
Taiwan. You can only do it three times. So if you change it once, then you want to go back. There's twice.
And then the next one, you're stuck.
So I guess I'm only getting sushi there twice. Is what you're telling me?
I mean, if you were a Taiwanese citizen, then you can only change your name 3 times total. Gotcha. But since you're an American, I'm pretty sure as long as you show up at the dollar, man, I think you're good.
This is actually a great loophole. I wonder if Americans could change their name to Salmon. Go to Taiwan as many times as they wanted and just change their name back every time they got back. But in Taiwan, every time you go, your name is going to have salmon in it.
And the next week's special is tuna.
Loophole. Okay, here's what you do, folks. You change your name in America, fly to Taiwan, get your sushi fix, fly back to America, change your name back, and then just repeat that process anytime that you want sushi. It probably won't be that expensive.
Are y'all sushi fans?
Oh, yeah.
I have experimented with sushi, but I don't really like fish that much. So
you're not a sashimi fan then?
No. I actually don't really know what that is, but I'm assuming because you said that it has fish in it.
Okay. It is 100% fish.
Okay, yes. Yep. Then, no, I'm not a fan. But I've had the California roll, which that has, what, crab in it or something?
Well, yeah.
You hesitated.
Well, California roll is like the basic sushi roll.
Right,
like,
exactly. I think that's why I like it.
If you're introducing someone to sushi, you'd introduce them to the California roll.
And also, if you're like me, who has had sushi several times but still don't like fish, the California roll is kind of where you live.
I can understand, for sure.
What's y'all's favorite sushi in Nashville? Do you have a place?
Ooh, Zach?
That, I'm going to blank on the name. It's there in Cool Springs. Orange is in the name. Orange, what is that place called?
Panda Express. Oh, wait.
It's there in Cool Springs, pretty close to the mall. I'm blanking on the name. It has orange.
Sure it's not Panda Express?
I have not had sushi.
They don't have sushi there.
Panda Express.
I hope they don't have sushi.
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, you never know what you're going to get when you roll into a Panda Express.
I'm a big fan. I'm not saying I wasn't a fan. I just haven't experienced
sushi.
It's not the
place that you specifically have in mind as your sushi
go-to
wonderland.
Yeah,
Nick, what's yours?
So there's this place down in Brentwood, right there off of, it's right next to Local Taco. So like, what is that? Old Hickory. And it's over next to that Kroger that's back there. It's called Bluefin. Mm. Honestly, some of the best pad Thai I've also had.
Really?
In Nashville.
I think I like pad Thai maybe.
Oh, well, yeah, pad Thai. I mean, unless you want shrimp in it, then you don't have to have fish or any type of crustacean or anything like that.
Did you find it? I see you
I'm
doing
searching right
over there.
Now.
Yeah, I'm searching for it too.
Because this is gonna drive me nuts. Let's see. Okay, we're getting close. Wild ginger. Orange isn't even in the title. What am I talking about?
But it's been
a long week.
I get it though. Like you know, you can zest both of them.
True.
Ginger and orange.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
I appreciate the confidence boost there.
Yeah. You're welcome. Okay. Well, enough of the sushi conversation. We can come back to it though. We don't have to end it for the night, but I want to get into Zach's story. So Zach, you are a pro golfer on pause right now. So you haven't done anything the last couple of years, but your big thing, like your kind of your job, I guess, is this, you know, YouTube, I don't want to say sensation, but you create essentially trick shot videos, right? And you post them to YouTube and your social channels, and you got a huge following from that.
Yeah, it started several years back while I was playing professionally. And yes, I am currently on pause. Haven't been playing in competition in a little while. Do have the goal of getting back into competition. However, that is where everything started, was when I was playing and would start filming little trick shot ideas that I'd have. And all of a sudden, some of them started getting a little traction. One thing led to another, started a YouTube channel, had a few videos do well, collaborated with a few other big accounts, very thankful for that. And now today I travel around, make golf, YouTube, Instagram content around the country and upload it, and thankful that so many people want to watch it and it allows me to be able to do that. So very thankful for all the support. Everyone who watches and tunes in. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big niche, I feel like. You're not just posting, you know, tips about how to golf well. You're not just some personality or athlete that people kind of fan over. You're creating content that is really niche, really unique, and people have a good time with. But what you just said makes me think that it wasn't. I was really hoping that one day you were just playing and all of a sudden you just did this really weird shot and it was an accident, but it ended up being awesome. And then you were like, I'm going to do this. I'm just going to make trick shots all of the time now. So you're telling me it was very purposeful.
It was purposeful. However, it wasn't just one video. It was several over time that kind of snowball effect.
Okay.
However, I will tell one story. I will say this was probably the biggest, most pivotal point in the social media kind of journey of mine so far. I was actually struggling with how much time I was spending creating content, because at this point in time, I was doing it. I enjoyed it, so it would have been more of a hobby, but I was spending roughly as much time as I was working. So like on my golf game and all that. And I was struggling whether or not I wanted to continue putting all that time into it, even though I did enjoy it. And following was growing. And I was out practicing one afternoon with a buddy of mine, and we were finishing up. And I was like, hey, man, there's like this cool putt around this bunker from like 150, 160 feet. Like, if I were to make this, that would be pretty cool. So I was like, we're going to spend 10 minutes. I did have quite a few golf balls behind me. I was like, just knock the ball out of the way if I miss, and 10 minutes, and then we're done, whether we make it or not. And I hit the first one a little long, hit the second one a little short. Then the third one, I was like, man, that did really feel like it was roughly in between both of those. And it's tracking, tracking, falls in. I was excited. It was a wild little putt. I uploaded it, and I was going to the Preds game that night. And I went to the Preds game. You don't really get good reception in there, so you don't really get texts or anything.
Sure.
I'm leaving the game, and I start getting these texts from some of my friends, and they were like, dude, saw you on ESPN, all this different stuff. And I'm sitting there thinking, I'm like, well, I guess maybe they like had a shot of the crowd at the hockey game or something, and saw me. And so I get home, flip on ESPN, watching SportsCenter back. They're doing the top 10 countdown. They get to number 3, and it was Pekka's crazy save at the game that I was just at. And then they literally announced my name right after they showed his, and number 2, and it was the putt that I uploaded that afternoon. And I'm like, what in the world?
That I was awesome. Like,
and so that was one of the more like wild moments. I had been praying whether or not I should continue doing this. And it was kind of a time that I was struggling a little bit with kind of the direction of things. And like I said, that was before it was full time, even though I was putting in a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was kind of a fun little story.
Yeah. There. Was that like the big moment where you felt like you made the decision to continue doing it? Did that solidify that, or did it sway you in any way, or how did that like impact your decision making?
So that kept me going for a little while for sure. And throughout kind of this whole process, it really is a journey. And if you're wanting to get into social media, it is not about one video ever, really. Now I've been very thankful to have, if I were to take a guess, probably 40 to 50 viral videos kind of thing. And so tough to build a career off of one or two viral mm-hmm. videos. You really do need to have kind of a backlog of content for people to continually want to tune in. And so that definitely did kind of catapult the following, and then just having more daily viewers after things like that. I think now I've been on ESPN's top 10 like 5 times, maybe four or five times.
That's really impressive.
That's so cool.
So it's been pretty wild. Honestly, it's, I'll watch it and it's almost not real. It's yeah.
So when was the moment that you were like, I'm going to do a trick shot and I'm going to put it on video? Like, when was that? Cause you said you like played around with some trick shots, but when did you was it just like one of those dude things where you're like, let's go mess around and parkour? And
is that what we sound like?
Yeah, that's
parkour is the first thing we go to.
Yes.
Yes and yes. So was it like a situation like that where you're like, we're just gonna mess around and do some trick shots, and then you really enjoyed it and you're like, I'm gonna record some of this? Or, you know, where was that transition from just playing golf to playing trickster golf?
So it started out photos is where it started. I knew nothing about taking photos, knew nothing about taking a video. Honestly, years ago, I was the last person to ever take a photo or ever want to take a video of anything. I was the last person I knew that was on Instagram in our generation. I just didn't care anything about social media. And long story there on kind of how I got into it. However, downloaded it and started posting just not content at that point in time because I had no idea what I was doing. And then took a picture one day and I was like, oh, that was really cool. And then in that second, it was a domino effect. And I had all these other ideas about how to take different photos. And so really got into photos for a little while. And then I was out walking with a buddy of mine. We were playing the back nine at Nashville Golf. And I was like, I've got an idea on how to film this certain shot that I hit. In my head, it sounded like a good idea. So I was like, hey, you keep playing and I'll meet you a few holes later, because it kind of loops around. So set the camera up, I hit one and I was like, ah, that wasn't quite what I was, the angle that I was looking for. And then I hit a second one and I was like, oh, that was pretty sweet. So I was like, I don't know if anyone else is going to think that's sweet, but I think that's pretty cool. So I uploaded it that night, and I think at that point in time, maybe my most viewed video was like a few thousand, like couple thousand maybe. And that video got 10,000 views in like 15 minutes.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, we might be onto something here. So that was the first kind of stinger. It's like a low ball flight that kind of looks cool, and you can track the ball the whole way. And that was a shot that I hit a lot. And I just thought it looked cool and I was going to throw it out there. So that is kind of the start of the stinger. And that is not really a trick shot, but has actually turned into a little bit of what I'm known for. And so, especially in the golf world. So that's kind of one side of the videos. The other side would be some trick shots through the years, chipping ping pong balls off of seven-story buildings into a solo cup on my buddy's head on the ground. That one took a little while.
Yeah.
I think I've actually seen that.
Really?
I think so.
Nick's a fan. He didn't know it.
I didn't know I was a fan, but now that you're mentioning it, I think I am a fan.
So how do you come up with your ideas for your trick videos? What's your process?
Normally, it's driving in the car, or I'm working out, or I'm having a cup of coffee, and it's just like, oh, I got an idea.
Huh.
Or I go out there, and people think I'm crazy because I'm just pacing around the green, like trying to come up with something. And then all of a sudden you get an idea. Sometimes it looks cool, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes you spend 10 hours and you never make it. And sometimes you set up the wildest trick shot and you make it the first time. So there's no rhyme or reason. It just thankfully happens.
Yeah, that was another one of my questions. I was like, how often or how many times does he practice these trick shots before they actually become the winner? Like, this is the one that we're posting on YouTube.
So one lesson, if you want to get into doing some trick shots, don't practice the trick shot before recording. Just start recording, because how many times I've made it before I started recording and then never made it after. So don't make that mistake.
Well, that's kind of, I mean, that's something that is just in general production, I feel like, anyways, you know, it's just kind of like a best practice. You don't want to turn, if you're filming a short film or, you know, a video or something, you don't want to turn the camera off too soon, and you don't want to wait too late, because you never know what's going to happen. Like, your actors might improvise something amazing that you want to catch, or you might make your trick shot on the first try and then you weren't recording and then you have to do it 20 more times. And then it's just annoying and you don't even like the trick shot anymore. I'm totally projecting.
Yes. No, you're absolutely right.
Okay, perfect.
Absolutely right. And to go off of what you said about not or stopping recording too soon, me and a buddy of mine were out there trying this one trick shot, and we had been out there for like 4 hours, and we were alternating on attempts and just passing the camera and the club back and forth, and we would just keep going. And he finally makes it. I don't even want to know how many attempts it actually was. We were out there all afternoon. He finally makes it. We get excited. I stop the recording and hand him the phone. I was like, dude, I'm going to try it just one time before we leave. And I made it. If we would have kept it recording and made that back to back, like, we posted it kind of together. But if you stop the recording, we didn't even say that we made them back to back, because no one's gonna believe it.
Yeah.
And so we didn't even say anything, but that's been our little secret, that we're out there for forever and we ended up making them back to back. It was pretty cool.
How long did it take you? How long were you out there? Was it like hours?
Oh, probably like at least 3, if not 4 hours. Nice. We were out there a long time for that one.
You are dedicated to your craft. I love it.
So probably the longest I ever remember trying a trick shot in a row, I was sliding this 30-pound slab, like rock slab, on every single attempt. So I had to like squat down, slide the slab, because it was, this ball was bouncing off all these slabs. And yes, it was wild.
I'm imagining you at like a parking garage. Where is this happening?
This one was in my buddy's backyard. He has like, he had a putting green all in his backyard.
And a bunch of concrete slabs. Okay.
Yes. And I think I slid that slab 500 plus times.
Wow.
I couldn't hardly get out of bed the next day. I was like, oh my goodness, we're never doing a trick shot like this again. But we got it. 8 hours later.
8 hours. Yikes. And all you were doing was just moving a concrete slab back and forth.
Every single time. I don't know why I was the one pegged to have to do that. I drew the short end of the stick on that one.
How many people do you collaborate with usually? Is it different people, or do you kind of have like a, you know, your same crew that does every shot with you, or what does that look like?
Most of my content actually is just me for the most part. But I would say through the years at this point, I've probably collaborated with probably 50 to 60 different accounts or people. Yeah, probably somewhere roughly around there. Most of the time, there are no, well, there's maybe a couple now that have kind of gotten into it. But for the past several years, there really weren't any golf content creators in Tennessee. And so I would have to travel to collaborate, which I did quite a bit. But all these different content creators are just all over the place. Mm-hmm. So I would go to Kansas and collaborate with one, go out to LA, collaborate with another one, Florida or wherever, or maybe a group of us would meet up somewhere. So definitely enjoy collaborating for sure.
Where's the coolest place that you have set up a trick shot or collaborated with someone?
So this wasn't a trick shot, but the coolest place that I've ever filmed, and it was probably the most enjoyable round of golf, was with one of my buddies. He was living in Hawaii. Went down to Hawaii and filmed at this course called Ko'olau. It is something else. And unfortunately, it's closed now. But
forever?
Apparently.
Oh, why?
I think they ran out of money Yeah, it really is. Because that place was so cool. It was like you were playing golf in Jurassic Park.
Oh, cool.
It was
that's pretty awesome.
It was pretty awesome.
You know what would have been cooler is if you'd actually had T-Rexes and dinosaurs come out and like swatch your, well, I guess a T-Rex couldn't swatch a golf ball because
short arms,
you know, it's tough for them. But there are other dinosaurs that definitely have the arm length to swat.
Absolutely.
That would be a cool trick shot.
That would have been if a velociraptor would have just come sprinting out of the shrubbery.
Oh my gosh, that also would be terrifying. That is probably one of the most top five terrifying movie scenes ever is the velociraptor scene in Jurassic Park. Do you agree or disagree? Yes, in the kitchen. See, you knew what I was talking about.
Oh, I knew exactly what you were talking
about.
Right
there at the circular window in the kitchen. Brings his little head up.
Oh my gosh. It's just like, it gives me so much anxiety just thinking about it.
And then it taps that claw on the top of that counter.
Jurassic Park, for being a 90s film, it was incredible.
It really was.
It's still incredible.
It holds up to any CGI film that you would put it next to today. I'm like, yeah, that velociraptor is definitely real. They found one. Somehow it was hiding for billions of years, and now they found it. Here it is in the kitchen.
And it's Hollywood trained.
It is an actor, and he is great.
Hollywood trained velociraptor.
That'll be the day.
Yeah, that's a terrifying scene.
I think velociraptor would also be another huge day, but past that, Hollywood trained velociraptor. That's what we need to, that's a goal.
I bet there is someone out there who their like their specialty they put on their resume, like, I could train dinosaurs. There's got to be someone out there who is eclectic enough to say that they could do that.
That's not my cup of tea.
Like, hey, you want a dinosaur for your film? I can handle it. I'll be your handler. I'll do it. Chris, find me a dinosaur.
Chris Pratt could probably put on his resume.
He probably could.
He trained three of them.
Four.
Oh, that's right. It's Blue and then...
I don't know. I don't remember the other ones. But Blue. She's a doll. Is she a girl?
I think so.
I don't know.
Oh, man. We're going to have to fact check this.
We're going to have to fact check whether or not a velociraptor is a male or female.
That's such an annoying fact check. Okay. Well, moving on. You talked about collaborating with a lot of really cool people. Is there any brand out there, any person out there that you're still just like crossing your fingers that you get to collaborate with one day? Who's like your dream person that you want to do a trick shot with?
I mean, I would have to say, as far as trick shots go, it would be pretty awesome to collaborate with Dude Perfect at some point in time.
What's his name?
Dude Perfect.
Dude?
Have you not heard of Dude Perfect?
No, I haven't.
Are you serious?
Don't look at me. Uh-uh. What? I have no idea.
Oh, my goodness.
Nikki J hasn't heard of him either.
So, okay.
Hold on. Tell us about him.
So, yeah. Dude Perfect has, if I were to guess on YouTube, this is a guess, but for sure over 50 million subscribers.
Oh, yeah. No, I didn't know they were called Dude Perfect. But they do all those crazy trick shots, and it's footballs, kickballs, frisbees, anything, everything that you think you can do a trick shot with, they've probably attempted in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, so that would be pretty awesome. They definitely have a massive, massive platform, and they were, in some ways, I mean, I don't know. I don't know anyone who really did what they did back when they started. Mm-hmm. They were kind of the first ones. I want to say 2009 or 10.
2009.
I was going to say they were like early on the YouTube game. And no one was doing trick shots. And when they started, they were literally just doing trick shots in the backyard with the basketball goal. And that was about it. And they would just name all these trick shots. And now they do all kinds of trick shots with, you name an athlete, they've pretty much been in one of their videos.
Huh.
So.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Dude Perfect.
Yeah.
That would be pretty awesome. Just one guy.
Yeah. There's five of them.
It is a group of them. Yeah. Okay.
And like you're talking baseball, like ballparks, you're talking stadiums. Yeah. And then they also have this big warehouse. They have like a massive property, I think in Texas. And they like will jump into a pool, but then on the way jump off a one-story building, they'll like do triple flip and then a frisbee, and then that will backboard onto a basketball. Like, it's insane.
Do they ever get hurt?
I've never seen them get hurt, but I don't think they're posting videos of... I don't think that's the demographic, or not like the... I don't think it's the audience.
It's not like a jackass for
No. It's sports. All crazy trick shots.
I would be absolutely blown away if they never have gotten injured.
Yeah. I mean, but if they're jumping off of
buildings, just made that up, but like, I'm sure at one point or another
Some of the stuff they do, I would say that they're probably pretty safe with it, but at the same time, some of the stuff they're doing, you are bound to get hurt at some point in time, I feel like.
Listen, I've never done a trick shot in my life for anything, and I get hurt all of the time. So if they're doing this stuff, they have to be injured in some way. They have to have, like, chronic ailments that they're, like, rubbing CBD cream on every day in order to just keep going forward.
They very well might be.
I'm going to reach out. I'm going to see how their joints are doing.
And then if I were to pick a second one, I would love to collaborate with this channel. They're from Australia called How Ridiculous.
Okay, sound fun.
That would be fun. They seem to be awesome guys, and they will throw a dart off of a crazy high bridge or something, and they just do the most ridiculous stuff. Literally, that's their name.
Where does the dart go?
onto a dartboard
on the water,
hundreds of feet down, or it would be land below.
Oh, okay.
But they do it. They do a lot of stuff. Where is it? Like Sweden or something? There's this. There's this. A dam, and they go up on top, and you get this centrifugal, or not centrifugal for. What is it called?
Like a wind vortex. Almost.
Yeah. There's a name for it though. That it, and they'll throw these balls or all kinds of different things off of it. And it's wild because it'll just like float way out, and they'll throw anything and everything off of this.
Will it come back to them?
No, it'll. Mm-hmm. They're trying to hit something on the ground, or they're trying. One of them's down there trying to catch something. Like it's
ridiculous. I'm gonna have to Google this later.
Oh yeah,
it sounds very intriguing.
It's dangerous though.
So holes. I should really
it's called YouTube hole.
So I should start at like 11 a.m., not 9 p.m. if I want to.
Oh, yeah, no,
you won't be sleeping.
Get rest.
No. It'll be like, wait, it's 3 a.m. How did? No, I have to be up in 3 hours. That's not gonna work.
See, that never happens to me. I hear about this happening, but I'm like, if it's 3 a.m., I know it's 3 a.m. I feel it. My body is rejecting the fact that it's 3 a.m. and I'm still awake. It shocks me that people are surprised by that sometimes. Does that happen to you guys often?
Not often, but I mean, it happens.
I do edit pretty late a lot of times. So sometimes you do look at the clock and you're like, oh, I thought it was 2 hours earlier. I guess I should probably go to bed now. So, yeah.
I think
I can feel you on that.
I think the latest that I have stayed up, even though I've been fully aware that it is this late, has been like 1 a.m. I mean, not forever.
Oh, when okay. I was like, were you ever a child?
Yes, I was a child, but I've also always loved sleep, and I never pulled all-nighters in college. I never studied hard enough to pull all-nighters. The only all-nighters I ever pulled in college were when I was traveling, and we were just, like, driving through the night.
I remember pulling an all-nighter for an exam in college and sitting down at the exam thinking, why did I do that? I can't think right now. I'm so tired. And somehow I got through that exam, and honestly, I don't know what I got on it. Thankfully, it was good enough to pass because we did graduate. So there's that.
Here we are.
We are here.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I wonder if you stay up all night studying, like, do you effectively remember everything? Because if you don't, I learned this recently, and I'm 30. I probably should have known this by now. But REM sleep is how your brain encodes long-term memories. So if you don't get any of that, how do you remember the stuff that you're studying? So basically, we're going into a theory of pulling all-nighter is actually worthless. That is my thesis statement for the night, folks.
Could be.
I like it.
Yeah.
I mean,
College students, don't do it.
I can't imagine pulling an all-nighter at this point in my life.
It would take us years to recover.
There's no way.
I'd be in my 40s and my eyes would be purple underneath, and someone would ask me what was wrong, and I'd say, I pulled an all-nighter when I was 31 and I'm still trying to recover. That is the story that I would be telling 10 years from now.
So the last time that I pulled, it wasn't necessarily by choice. I just couldn't fall asleep. I was going over to Scotland, and we left the States probably at like 9 p.m. roughly, and it's about a five and a half hour flight to Edinburgh, and we were supposed to be arriving in Edinburgh, oh boy, I don't, like 10 a.m., something like that, I think, if I remember correctly. I think they're 4 hours, 5 hours ahead of us here. So, needless to say, we get there. I don't sleep 1 second on the plane. We get off, meet up with everyone, and they're like, y'all ready to go to the course? And I'm like, I need a quadruple espresso, and then we'll see. And
but you drink that normally. You literally told me that the other day. You were like, I usually drink it with 3 or 4 espressos, and I'm like, dude, we're recording at 8 p.m. Are you sure that you want that?
I don't do espresso after about 5 p.m., but if I have a cup of coffee, it's not going to affect me whatsoever. I could have it 10 minutes later, go to bed. Cup of coffee, espresso, A little different.
But I bet your quality of sleep would be better if you didn't have caffeine. I'm totally not judging you on your sleep. However, I have done so much research on sleep quality and stuff over the last few years because I'm not good at it and I don't get good quality. And so I have studied a lot about just the effects of caffeine. And I think that your body just adapts to it. So you could still sleep, but I don't think you're getting as good of sleep as you could if you, you know, didn't have a cup of coffee 10 minutes before bed. But I mean,
you're probably right.
Listen, you keep living your life. You are doing a great job and I am here for it. However, if one day you're like, you know what? I remember Gina said caffeine before bed might not be the best thing.
As he drinks his coffee
and he stares at me. He's giving me the side eye as he's drinking his coffee.
It's delicious, by the way.
The coffee?
It's good.
Wow, it's a Keurig. So awesome. I mean, I think you're on board.
Works
with
well.
Yeah, James Corden, he loves a Keurig, so
perfect.
Yeah, you and him are in the same boat. Okay. So you're not just golfing or not just a golfer, not just doing all these trick shots. You're actually starting a clothing brand too. Like you've kind of been ramping that up over the pandemic year, right? Was it before then? And if it wasn't, and you started ramping it up, you know, over COVID and this pandemic, what's it been like trying to launch a new brand over this year?
Yeah, so we have been working on it for about a year or so, roughly, leading up to the launch. And we ended up launching the day the lockdown started here.
Nice.
In the US. And so it's going to be a great story to tell one day that is the day that we launched our brand. And
but it's an athletic brand, right?
It is.
No one's buying real clothes anymore. So I feel like Correct. That's the exact kind of, if you were going to launch a clothing brand, you don't want to launch a pantsuit brand, right? No one's wearing pantsuits anymore. They're not even wearing pants. Just maybe the top half of the pantsuit.
The Zoom call.
It's only.
But athletic half. Clothes, I'd buy those. I still buy those.
Yeah, I definitely do. And I buy golf clothes. Well, not anymore since I
you have theory, clothes. You make clothes.
In theory, I buy them.
/ you just own them.
Yes.
You own all your own clothes from the get-go.
Correct.
Very interesting. Was this something that you like, you were just like, I want to start making clothes, or what was your, did you have inspo?
So I, over a few years, I just like the idea of working with family. And so it's me, my brother and my brother-in-law who started it. I would not be able to do it without them. There is a lot that goes into starting a clothing brand, dealing with the manufacturing, dealing with all the trademarks, just everything. It's a lot. I wouldn't be able to do it. So very thankful that they were on board for it. And yeah, we just started talking about it one day and just kept talking about it. And then a year later, we did it.
I have so much admiration for people who talk about doing something that they want to do and then actually do it, because I just talk about stuff that I want to do forever and ever and ever, and then I never actually act on it. So people like you who are just like, yeah, I want to do this and I'm going to go do this, I have mad respect for.
That is kind of who I am and how I've lived for a long time. For example, my buddy in Hawaii, he was like, hey man, you should come to Hawaii sometime. And like a week later, I was like, hey man, so what's your schedule look like in like 2 weeks? And he was like, oh, well, let me check.
Oh, was I serious about that? Okay, here, yeah, I definitely have room for you.
Yeah. And so I was like, well, I'm looking at flights right now. He's like, oh, okay, well, probably need to check with the family real quick. I was like, oh yeah, no, definitely. And then,
but I already bought the tickets.
Yeah. And so ended up very thankful. They were very gracious in hosting me down there. And that was fun. But that's kind of how I've been. When I jumped into making YouTube videos, I started and I made I think I made 30 videos, like roughly 15 to 20 minute videos each video. I think I went every other day during the middle of the winter for golf content from Thanksgiving to middle of January, every other day. So almost like 2 full months, middle of winter here in Nashville, and just grinded out videos. I'd be the only one on the golf course most of the time, freezing out there. Can't feel my hands. Half the time I'd have to go back into the clubhouse because the camera shuts off because it's so cold. And we're just out there, and I was spending 40 hours a week grinding out YouTube videos when I first started.
That's amazing. So. Well, and look at you now. Like, you were talking about, you had like 1,000, you know, views on some of your first videos. And I saw your YouTube channel today. Like, you have over 8 million views. That's huge.
I'm very thankful. It really has been wild. Several different things happening through the years with different videos getting a lot of traction. And one day I get an email from YouTube, and I thought it was a spam email. I was like, this is a weird email, but I was like, it's from YouTube.com, like legit YouTube.com. I mean, you can click on the thing and make sure it's not some weird thing. And I was like, but if this was a scam email, this is a really bad one, because it doesn't tell you to click on anything or do anything. It was just like, within the next 24 hours, you've been selected as a content creator on the rise for YouTube, and you'll be put on the top of the trending page for 24 hours, your channel. And I was like, nah, there's no way. Because it's only one.
Was this before or after you were number two on SportsCenter?
This was like 2 years later, a year and a half later, probably. Oh, okay. Something like that. And so that was pretty wild. Because they probably do that with, across all of YouTube, probably less than 100 channels a year. Because they don't do one every day. A lot of days they will, but I just, that was pretty ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And my channel that day, I forgot the ratio, but I went from, I had like 5 videos in a row that got like a lot of traction. And then they sent that email to me. But before those like 5 videos and that email being the creator on the rise, I think within like a 2 week span, I had like tripled my entire channel's views, and I had been doing it for like a year before.
Were you doing some of the YouTube best practices in terms of, you know, optimizing your videos, using tags, categories, stuff like that? Were you doing all of those like optimization tactics, or do you think it was just purely based on people were craving the content that you were putting out?
I would do all I could do everything right within trying to make sure that things were posted properly and certain things like that. However, if I didn't focus on the content, I wouldn't have gotten the traction that I got. So if you're wanting to start on YouTube, yes, get the tags right, get your titles right. Thumbnails, everything, by the way, like 98%, like focus on thumbnail.
Interesting.
Because if no one clicks on it, YouTube's like, no one cares about that.
And you think
topic.
People focus on the thumbnail more than they do the title?
100%. They look at the thumbnail first and then title. You want a good title. And those words that are in the title are important as far as the algorithm goes. But the thumbnail is everything. Your click-through rate is everything. However, all that being said, I work really hard to make sure to do all that properly, but focus on the content, because if someone clicks on the video, you can do all the right things to get them to click. But if the content's not engaging and no one cares, YouTube's going to be like, well, you're either being clickbaity or you just don't have good content, so they won't serve it up. So content comes first for sure. And then once you have the content finished, then you can proceed with doing everything else properly. And if you do it over time, I've told everyone this that has wanted to get into YouTube, you spend 1 year putting 20 to 30 hours a week. I know that sounds like a ton, into whatever you're passionate about, and stay consistent. I would be shocked if you weren't able to at least come close to making ends meet. If you are doing something you're passionate about, because people are attracted to seeing people passionate about what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So if you can do 1 year, 20 to 30 hours a week, I know that seems like a huge investment, but it's like starting a business. You're going to need to put in a lot of upfront work before you're able to make anything from it. And like I said, all along, I'm very thankful that I'm able to do this for a living. There have been so many times I'm at a course filming and I'm just looking around and it's like, wow, this is actually my office today.
That's so pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. I'm very thankful for sure.
Would you, before you started doing all of these videos, would you have considered yourself a creative person?
Absolutely not.
Do you consider yourself a creative person now?
It is weird, but yes. I'm telling you, that one photo that I took, it was a domino effect. That day, in 1 second, the Lord changed how I looked at everything. In 1 second. It was wild. I was sitting there after I took the photo. Everything changed.
Yeah.
Just how my mind worked.
I mean, I would say, like, you're a hugely creative person. Like, the stuff that you're having to come up with in order to create these trick shots, and even just the way that you're utilizing YouTube and your social media channels. I personally think the phrase creative person is redundant, because I think just in general, we are created as creative beings. Like, we're just innately that. Everyone is creative in some way. It could be musical. It could be coming up with these trick shots. It could be writing. It could be solving problems. Like, even accountants who, you know, might be some of the most boring people in the world. I studied accounting. I can say that. Don't come at me. are creative because they're having to solve these problems, right? And so, yeah, I did want to ask you that because I was curious, because I was like, I bet he doesn't think he's creative, but you're definitely creative.
Well, I appreciate it. I never would have thought in a million years, 5-6 years ago, that I would have been thought of as a creative person. The biggest piece of advice I can say, because I kid you not, I view myself as the least creative person that I knew. That is no joke. 5 or 6 years ago, before I got started into everything. And you just have to go out there and start doing. I don't know how else to explain it. Literally, just go take a picture. It could be the worst one ever. And then look at it and be like, I should do this better. Take another one. This could be better. 5 years later, all of a sudden, you're doing photography for your work.
I think you hit on a really important point. I don't think a lot of people think of creativity as this process where you grow and you learn and you study things that you've done beforehand in order to make it better. Like, it truly is a craft as much as, you know, playing an instrument or being a consultant or a good public speaker or an engineer, you name it. Like, you have to spend time learning what you are doing. You have to learn photography. You have to learn what content people like, and you start figuring out how to create more of that. You break down, you know, the different aspects of any sort of process, and you just keep building on that, and you keep working at it, and you keep working at it. So creativity really is something that you try to master, and it's not necessarily something that you're just born with, because everyone's born with creativity, but you have to practice it in order to, you know, get the full benefit of it.
I got a question. I'm over here raising my hand, like,
Nikki J.
Okay, so I mean, you come out with this clothing line, which, what's the name of your clothing line?
Ostrich.
Oh, dude, that's cool. I like that. I might buy a t-shirt.
This is the hat. This is the logo.
I like that. It's very simple. It's to the point. I like it.
And also, who doesn't like a good ostrich?
That's right.
Exactly.
They're awesome.
They're not your average birdie.
That's right. Is that your tagline?
It is.
Nice.
I like that. I like that. But do you come up with your own? So obviously, you come up with all the content for your YouTube channel. But are you going through and designing all the t-shirts? Are you just approving the t-shirts or collared shirts or whatever you have apparel-wise?
So my brother would label himself a fashionista.
Yeah. Wow.
Okay. That's yes, he would. yeah. And so he actually does a lot of the design, and then he'll kind of bring it to me and my brother-in-law. We'll kind of go back and forth and eventually land on what we're going to move forward with. But I would say my brother actually does do the majority of kind of seeking out the right fabrics, and then he'll bring them to us, and then we'll kind of go from there. But definitely a group effort. But my brother Andrew, the fashionista, would probably take the lead on that one.
That's cool. That's really, really cool though.
All right, you guys want to talk about some good news?
Sounds
Zach,
good.
Thank you so much for being here. I am really thankful that you wanted to be a part of this and just join us tonight. We had a good time. All right, guys, good news for this week. And the good news about the good news is we have more really young people doing amazing things that we can either choose to be really embarrassed that we haven't done those things as well, or we can say, wow, these people are really cool. So the first story, Deja Taylor, who is in high school and working on science fair projects, which did you guys take the science fair seriously in high school? Or I don't even think I did it in high school. Did y'all take it seriously in middle school?
I definitely didn't.
I think we had one. I think I remember one in elementary school, maybe. If there was one past that, I definitely did.
Yeah,
not.
So can y'all even remember the experiments that you did?
I would have been... Prior to high school, 100%, I did do a science fair in high school. I feel like we did some science projects. Yeah, I homeschooled up until high school. So we would get together with like other homeschoolers, and I would feel like we would do some sort of science project. I don't know. Who knows? I don't really remember, though, doing any sort of science fair at all.
Clearly,
sure.
If we did science fair projects, they were not as meaningful as this science fair project.
I feel like I made a molecule with Play-Doh or something like that.
I mean, that's pretty cool. I'm pretty sure I used like spaghetti sticks or something for one of my science fair projects, and I don't even remember why. I'm like, I don't know what spaghetti has to do with this except that it's delicious. So is that what we talked about? Is how good spaghetti is? I'm not really sure.
It's pretty delicious.
But anyways, Deja Taylor, she is in high school doing these science fair projects and was really struck by just the need for people, especially in countries where healthcare and access to healthcare is not as accessible as it is in America. She wanted, if those people living in those countries needed to have surgery, she was like, how will they know if it's infected in time to get good health care before it's too late? So she is working on this process to essentially create these sutures, post-surgical sutures, that will turn a different color based on the pH. So a healthy skin pH is around 5, I think. And if it's infected, it'll go up to 9. And so she learned that beets actually turn a different color when they reach a pH of 9. So she's been using beets and different suture threads to figure out if there's a way that they can, you know, use these sutures and people find out that they have an infection like earlier than they would have before it's just, you know, too late. There, it's still developing, which I guess that you can say that about all science, right? Like science has not fully been figured out.
And she's in high school?
She's in high school.
Wow.
Yes. Super cool. Love you, Deja. However, I'm like, I'm 30 and I have not figured out anything that important. So, but we very much appreciate her. And she's just been working like really hard on this and is hoping to continue studying it and can kind of continue figuring out different ways to make it work. Because, you know, if there is an infection like in a muscle or something, then you're not going to know about that infection in the muscle until it reaches the skin, because that's where the suture is, right? So they're trying to figure out ways that you can use it, how it can still be beneficial for situations like that. But I'm like, Homegirl is awesome because she's doing something like this.
That's awesome. And it came from beets?
Beets. Yes. Do you guys like beets?
I do not.
Me either.
I don't think so. Every time I think of beets, though, I think of my dad eating beets. So I think that's, yeah, no, I'm good. I'll pass.
I don't even think that I've had like a real beet. Hold on. I think I'm getting things confused. What do you have at Thanksgiving?
That is called a cranberry sauce.
And that does not come from a beet.
No.
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 Okay.
It comes from cranberries.
Yes, you were right. We're going to edit all of this out.
I think for the next episode, we need to get you a beet to make sure you know what a beet tastes like and what it is.
I'm not trying a beet.
What actually, if we both tried it?
That kind of beet, I'll try. But
boots and cats. Yeah. Boots and cats.
A food beet, I'm not so sure. Anyways, Deja, you rock. Keep doing your thing. All right, the next story is out of Scotland. Shetland in Scotland. And I definitely know that that is the correct way to pronounce it because I looked it up beforehand.
Love it.
Yes. They are doing, or they created the world's first tidal-powered cars. And what they mean by that is a tidal-powered car charging station. So they can use, because of their location and the way that the tide and the coast, like where the coast is located, the tide comes in and comes out, that force and that energy they're able to use to generate electricity and renewable energy sources. So they're using that to charge cars.
Holy cow.
That's yes. pretty awesome. That's
and really this cool. story led me into a whole hole on the National Geographic to learn about tidal energy because I'd never heard about it, but it like started in like 1966. Like people were
probably with someone in high school.
Probably.
It seems to be a common trend.
Yes. Gosh, high schoolers are so smart. I'm like, what was I focused on in high school? Just sports. That's it. Sports.
Sports.
But yeah, it's been around for a really long time. And I had a crash course in it earlier. And I also, fun fact, National Geographic has a newsletter for educators. And I am not an educator, but I signed up for it. Because I'm like, this is cool. I can learn some really cool stuff and yeah. not tell anyone about it. But at least I'll know. And that'd be fun.
For sure.
So, Shetland, you're doing great things for the environment. We appreciate you. Okay, this next story is another young kid, but this story is so cute. I love it. Darius Brown, he's 12 years old. He makes and donates bow ties to help shelter animals find their forever homes. Isn't that the sweetest thing? Dogs in bow ties. I mean, is there anything cuter than that?
He needs to go on Shark Tank with that.
That's yeah.
I think he needs to. I know it's a not for nonprofit, but still.
I mean, to get the word funding,
out,
yeah,
to get the word out,
and to get funding. I mean, there.
I mean, even if they don't take it, like, even if Shark Tank doesn't take it, just being on Shark Tank and having that
there.
Viewer. I mean, yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, and he started a nonprofit called Bow and Paws, super cute, to fundraise for the materials to create the bow ties because him and his family were paying for them out of pocket. So now they're getting donations and they get to keep doing their thing. And they're so cute. And President Barack Obama approves. So
why does he approve? How does he approve?
He sent him a letter. I'll read you the letter. It's very nice. Dear Darius, after hearing your story, I wanted to reach out to commend you for your commitment to community service. From founding Bow and Paws to lifting up the lives of those around you, it's clear you are doing your part to look out for your fellow citizens, and I trust you take tremendous pride in all you have accomplished. As long as you stay engaged in the world around you, continue looking for ways to help others, and never give up on yourself, I'm confident our future will be bright. Know that I'm rooting for you in all you do, and I wish you the very best. if you got a letter like that from a president at 12, I mean, I'd be like, I'm literally going to rule the world. This is what's going to happen because I have my whole life in front of me.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The boys are, they're like, yeah.
I mean, I think he has one more letter from a president than this room has, so.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
100%.
I mean, that is very, very.
That's so really cool, though.
Clear.
Yeah.
But he started creating these bow ties because he was having, like, motor skill delays, like, development delays. And so his mom and sister were like, maybe this will help. So he started making these bow ties with his family, and then he kept doing it, and he wears a bow tie every day, and he donates all these bow ties to dogs.
That's cool. I wish I could. Well, I guess I could wear a bow tie every day, but it's really not in me to wear a bow tie every day.
Well, because, I mean, could you wear it with, like, your t-shirts?
Yeah, I don't. I'm just a lonely bartender. I don't think. Well, I guess I could. I just don't work at a fine dining restaurant where, you know, like, a collared shirt is really necessary. I just wear my t-shirts. I mean, I guess I could just kind of wear the entire wrap around and just, like, clip it in. Yeah,
why don't we just make it a trend to just wear bow ties on your t-shirts? I mean, I'm not going to, but I would support you if you wanted to start working on that
trend. Can I just do, like, a bow tie pin?
You could just do one of those tuxedo tees that has, like, the bow tie printed on.
There we go.
I mean, I don't know.
Do you make that?
Maybe we can.
Send it to Andrew. Okay, our last story. A UK soccer club is making some waves in sustainability. The Forest Green Rovers, they are actually owned, I think, by, yes, a sustainable energy entrepreneur, Dale Vince. So all of this stuff that they're doing kind of makes sense because their owner, that's his thing. But they have switched to renewable energy for electricity. They are actually changing their kits, which is their uniform, for everyone out there who's not a Ted Lasso fan or like a UK soccer fan. That's what that means. Your jerseys.
For me, at least, yes. In this room.
So their new kits, quote unquote, are made of 3 cups of coffee bean waste and 5 plastic bottles and are supposedly lighter and more breathable than what they're currently using. And they're changing their food. So they're not serving burgers and hot dogs and wild card fish and chips, which that's not a wild card over there. But for me, I'd be like, I'm never buying that.
I would. Would you, Zach?
The fish and chips?
Yeah, would you buy the fish and chips at a football game?
100%. The one weird thing, when I was over there, this is a little side note, ordered the fish and chips, first meal, full-on meal that I had while I was there, and I was pretty excited about these fish and chips. Get the fish and chips, and they have green peas with them. Just thought that was kind of weird. I don't mind them. I like them, but I didn't anticipate getting green peas with fish and french fries.
Yeah, because it's not fish and chips and peas.
Correct. That's what I'm saying.
I wonder if that's the norm.
I think it is, actually. Because I ordered it a few times at different places and always came with green peas.
Maybe they think that people hate peas and they would never order it if they knew that it came with peas.
Maybe. They were actually good. I ate them all.
I like peas.
Yeah.
I'm just really curious, and oh, look, gotta go on a trip. Sorry, Gina, we can't record for about 2 weeks.
So they're not serving those things anymore. They're not serving fish and chips and peas. They're serving certified vegan food at their stadiums.
My sister could be one of their chefs.
Oh, Lindsay.
Yes, she is.
Shout out to Lindsay.
Very much health oriented.
I wonder if they're still serving hot dogs, but they're just vegan hot dogs. Because I think that I could be down with that. Because you just put, you know, enough ketchup on it that it, I mean, it still tastes like a hot dog. Right? Kind of?
I think it's one of those things where, like, if it's just the meat, you can taste the difference. But if you're looking at the bun, the ketchup, the mustard, if you want relish or onions or whatever you want on it, I think everything just kind of molds
it
in together.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say hide. I just think.
I'm going to take your word for that.
Yeah, that's fine.
The next time we go
I'm not going to dive out there and just be like, all right, I'm going to go in for a vegan hot dog. But
we'll if we do, we'll let you know.
Honestly, I kind of want to try one of those jerseys.
I do too. That's interesting.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
I wonder if they would like sell them. Because you know how every team has, you know, their merch. I wonder if they would sell the sustainable merch instead of the normal jerseys. Do UK's football teams even sell merch?
Oh yeah.
Do they care as much as we do?
Way more.
Yeah.
Oh okay.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Like soccer over there is wildly popular. Some of those teams over there, there's another side note, I'm just getting off on some small tangents.
We love tangents.
So if you look at the valuation of the football clubs over there, soccer, but they call it football, it is wild how valuable they are. Like more valuable than NFL teams.
Really?
Here.
Huh.
Like Man U, I don't know the exact numbers, I think is worth roughly as much as the Dallas Cowboys.
So do you think it's more? Because that's kind of like their sport? Like they don't also have European basketball that's as big as the NBA or MLB or NHL. Like we also have all of these other huge sports leagues that are kind of taking maybe some of the shares and like valuation, as opposed to over in the UK, like they're pretty much, sure, they have these other sports, they exist, but they're not really as big of a deal as they are here. Do you think that could have something to do with it?
I think definitely, for sure.
Have you watched Ted Lasso?
Every single episode.
Oh my gosh. It is, if you guys have not watched it yet, it is my favorite show that came out last year. Have you watched it, Nick?
No, I haven't.
DJ Nikki J, add it to your list. It is so good.
DJ Nikki J is actually really not like in tune with social media and pulp culture, so I really have no idea.
You watch Netflix and other TV.
Yeah, but I go in like weird. Believe me, it's not your normal pop culture holes that I get stuck in.
He watches a lot of documentaries.
Yeah.
Have you seen the Monopoly documentary, by the way?
So good.
That was filmed so well, too.
Oh,
and absolutely wild.
Yep. Go watch it.
You know, I haven't 100% watched
it. Go watch it.
One of my favorite things about documentaries is a lot of times as they start the story, it ends up being a completely different story because something crazy happens in the middle of them filming it. Like, have you guys watched The Queen of Versailles?
I've seen
it on my list, but I haven't actually watched it.
So it's, I'm probably fudging this, but there's this big like land developer or something. And anyways, it starts off as one story and it ends up being about the housing crash in 2008. And it was insane. Was it 2008? 2012?
I mean, there was a big crash in 2008.
I think it was 2008. And the rest of the film was completely different. That's one of the things that I really love about documentaries is you set out to tell one story and you actually end up telling something completely different because you're just with it for so long.
I love it.
You definitely need to watch The McMillions because it's
is that
about
what it's
McDonald's.
Called? Oh, wait. I thought we were Monopoly talking about Monopoly.
Game. But it's with the Monopoly game.
Is this
McDonald's.
The same one?
Same one.
Okay.
Yeah. They incorporate
it.
Though,
wild.
To like make it more understandable, they go through and they actually incorporate things that we all know about and love in everyday life.
Monopoly.
Well, I mean, I don't,
is that the thing that you love, or is McDonald's the thing that you love?
Definitely not McDonald's.
Okay.
Yeah.
But as a kid, you remember when the Monopoly game was going on and you'd go collect the pieces?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I played a really intense game of Monopoly in high school as well. So
if you put your heart and soul
kid.
Into that, probably don't watch this because it's going to be devastating to know that it was all not real.
Excuse me?
Go watch it.
Go watch it.
We're just going to leave it at that.
Yes.
Just go watch
okay,
it.
Okay, I'll add it to my list. All right, well, that is the good news for the week. Thank you, everyone, for joining. We are so glad that you spent your time with us. We really appreciate it, and we love having you here, and we will talk to you guys next week.
Yeah, we also loved having Zach here,
yes,
too.
Yes, Zach, you are awesome. We appreciate
really
having
cool.
you.
I appreciate y'all having me. This was fun.
All right.
We'll have to maybe do it again sometime.
Yes,
yeah,
absolutely.
Down. I'm down. Cool. Cheers.
Cheers. It's time for the Happiest Hour Fact Check. Always need a good air horn app.
I'm glad that worked.
Yes, me too. Okay, so the biggest question we had this week, I guess, was about the raptors from Jurassic Park.
Well, technically, Jurassic World.
Jurassic World. Yes. Yes. Thank you for correcting me, because we would have had to have another fact check.
Fact checked on fact checked on fact check.
Yes. So the only one that we could remember was Blue, but there were three others.
Yes.
And their names were Charlie, Delta, and Echo. And they were all female.
Yep.
They were like the Velociraptor Destiny's children before they had to let one go.
Well, I don't want to do any spoilers, but I mean, now there only is one.
Blue's the Beyonce.
Blue's the Beyonce.
Yep. She made it.
Oh, man. She is the survivor.
Oh. Oh, wow. Yep. Did that one.
I did do that one. That was cool.
All right. Sweet. Well, thanks for joining us. Our producer is the always amazing DJ Nikki J. Josh Suddeth at Sud Studios created and recorded our theme song. Our good news stories each week are discovered by Sean Connolly, and my friend Haruna Rashid develops our episode artwork. And I am your host, Gina Medlin. You can subscribe to and drop a review of our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen. And if you enjoyed it, please remember to follow, like, and share it with the people you love, and even the people you don't like so much, but who could use some good news. We are so glad you spent your time with us, and we hope you join us again next week. Cheers!